We're going to turn our attention now to the process of weaving a good tale. A guy who knows how to weave a good tale is Jerry Apps, Madison historian, writer, professor emeritus at the UW-Madison. He's the author of more than 40 books, including In a Pickle, The Travels of Increased Joseph, and his newest novel is called Blue Shadows Farm, and it's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. I had a chance to finish reading it a couple weeks ago and really enjoyed it a lot. Jerry received the Council for Wisconsin Writers 2007 Major Achievement Award, the Wisconsin Library Association's most notable Wisconsin Writers Award, and we're really pleased to have him back to talk about his book and talk about writing and certainly answer any questions or comments that you might have. So I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Jerry, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry.
Great to have you back, and I really did enjoy your book a lot. Fascinated by it, and we're not going to reveal the ending, but you had me guessing. Well, you really had me guessing right to the last page.
That's what's supposed to happen.
Boy, I tell you what, that was explain what the book's about.
Well, it's difficult to explain in a sentence or two, but it's a story of three generations on a Wisconsin farm in fictional Ames County. I invented this county in central Wisconsin, and I've had just lots of fun with that. This is the third novel in the series. I'm working on a fourth that deals with Ames County, which for those of you who are looking for it on the map, well, don't look don't look too carefully. But if you were to combine Washera County, Adams, Marquette, Portage, put all that together and plop down a new county in that area, that's what Ames is about. And this particular book is about three generations of one family going back to 1867 when a Civil War veteran, Silas Starkweather, decided to homestead 160 acres in Ames County. And it's the story all about his difficulties and challenges and then two more generations to follow.
Yeah. It was a great opening to the book, by the way, too. I love the opening with the Civil War part.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like I just did that off the top of my head. And I tell you, I researched that beyond belief to come up with this scene where Silas is shot in the head. And people, for years after, thought that maybe why he was doing some of these strange things on this Ames County farm was due to the fact that a Confederate soldier had creased his head with a mini ball.
Well, you obviously are having fun with that county and with that that whole area.
Well, and there's a lot more to it as well. One of the things that I've been trying to do for the last half dozen, 10 years, is to use historical fiction as a way of dealing with contemporary issues.
Yeah.
And looking at a contemporary issue from a historical perspective and then writing it as a story, I found one, at least for me, an interesting way of introducing the issue. In this case, for this book, land use policy, going back to how people way back in the days of homesteading land, how they dealt with the land. So that's what the book, the deeper message of this book is about.
The land use policy. Give us a call if you have a question or comment for Jerry Apps here as we move along and talk with us about his novel. It's called Blue Shadows Farm, or about writing in general. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. And without giving away the Civil War experience is what leads to the strange behavior.
That's right. He was on this secret mission, hauling a mysterious something on a wagon pulled by a team of mules. And when in the first scene, where the attack takes place and everyone is killed except Silas, who they thought was dead. And he discovers what this mysterious thing was that they were hauling. And in the bill of lading, there was a reference to Link Lake, Wisconsin. And Link Lake is one of the cities in Ames County. And then that, along with the fact that he learned about the Homestead Act, which Abraham Lincoln had signed in 1862, and made available 160 acres of land to those who were willing the language, to prove up in 5 years, which meant building a cabin and farming. So I researched the Homestead Act, and then I brought my character, Silas, to central Wisconsin, homesteading. And many people didn't believe this, and it's true. The history in my books are as true as I can make it. There was a lot of land, federal land, yet in Wisconsin after the Civil War. And this farm was still federal land available for homesteading. And if you had been a Civil War veteran and had spent a couple of years fighting for the North, obviously, there's an interesting wrinkle to it all, you had first dibs at homestead land. And thus, the fact that he came to central Wisconsin in search of this mysterious thing that he learned about, and the fact that the land was available free of charge, that's how the story got started.
Yeah, and it's not only the Homestead Act in terms of land use. I mean, you have a land use thread that goes right through as times change.
Exactly, and he had no. One needs to know this too about my main character, Silas Starkweather, in this first generation. He had no love for farming, whatever. He did not want to be a farmer. He had grown up in Watertown, New York. That part of the story is also historically accurate, because many of the early settlers in Wisconsin had come from upstate New York. And he had worked in a leather shop with his father in Watertown, New York. And his father was furious with him that he would go to, and this is how it was described in those days, the wilds of Wisconsin, to pursue some dream that seemed silly, and Silas didn't share his dream with anyone, including the reader, until you get to the end of the book. So he came here under false pretenses, really. And then as he lived and worked on this hardscrabble farm, sandy, stony, in central Wisconsin, Ames County was not the richest soil that God had ever made. He began to change his mind. His neighbors were so uncommonly kind to him. They helped him build his log cabin. They showed him how to plant corn. They helped him break the land with oxen, all of which is the details are historically accurate. And he couldn't believe it. He wanted to be alone. He didn't want anybody to bother him. And yet his neighbors were uncommonly kind in helping him. And he had some close scrapes. A bear almost caught him at one time. And he shot the bear and became known as that fellow from out east who killed the bear with his bare hands. And great stories, he shot the bear, but great stories began to develop on how he had killed this bear single-handed with a jackknife. And you know how that sort of thing develops.
Well, is that part of it historically? I mean, I think it is, the fact that neighbors helping.
Absolutely. I have, as you know, and as those who've read my other books know, I spend a lot of time researching what goes on and what went on in the upper Midwest, and especially Wisconsin. And the idea that here in Wisconsin, we had so many different ethnic groups settling in an area. And in the area where Silas Starkweather settled, I had some of his neighbors being Norwegian. Some were German, and all of these people knew, and this is very historically accurate, all of these people knew that when they settled in the quote-unquote wilds of Wisconsin, that they couldn't make it alone. They had to work. They had to cooperate with their neighbors. And the idea of bees, thrashing bees, sallow-filling bees that came later, all of that came from, I believe, those early settlement days when the pioneer farmer sitting there by himself, as some people would suggest, couldn't make it. He just couldn't. He depended so much on his neighbors for everything, from helping with the work to socializing to providing a way for the women to have a good time in the depths of winter when everything was quiet and lonesome. So I tried to make the point that in this book, as I have in my other books, that neighborhoods and community were essential to the survival of farmers in those early days.
Yeah, I you certainly make that point well in this book and your other books as well. And another book, as a matter of fact, on the way. We'll talk about that later. I want to find out what you're working on next here. But Blue Shadows Farm, certainly there were a lot of difficult challenges, and I think in some ways it's not all that different today than it was then.
It's not. It's very similar, and that's the uncanny connection of the past with the present. Sure, the circumstances were very different. There was no such thing as electricity and tractors and computers and all of what we have in society today. Yet the fundamental challenge of how we all need to take care of the land was important then as it's important today. That attitude toward caring for the land is one that's fundamental and essential and has been and will continue to be. And that's why that theme runs all through this book. And it's dealt with in different ways. In the three generations that I have in this book, each of those generations dealt with that question differently. Silas dealt with it as I'm here because I have another reason. But then he slowly turned as his neighbors and as his own work and as the seasons passed and as his crops mostly prospered and as he developed a small herd of dairy cattle and he had some hogs, and he began to appreciate that the land had something more to it than just a place to make a living, that the land had, and these are some of the words that came out of the community, a spiritual dimension to it. The land was so much more than just something that produced crops.
And one of the things I would like to talk about is I liked many of the characters in your book. There was a character or two that I wasn't really...
And who might those have been, Larry?
I wasn't really all that drawn to one of the characters. I had a kind of a dislike for. And I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes here. Jerry Apps Madison, historian and writer, author of his latest novel. It's called Blue Shadows Farm, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. We're talking with him about that book, and we'll be right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest author Jerry Apps of Madison, written many, many books, including his latest novel. It's called Blue Shadows Farm. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press, and I'm pleased to have him back to be with us to talk about writing, to talk about his book, and certainly to answer your questions. And if you want to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. His book takes place on a farm in central Wisconsin and over three generations, starting back from the Civil War and pretty much up to the present, with a heck of a twist, a heck of a reveal right at the end of the book, which caught me off guard. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay, now I understand. Anyway, we'll take some calls, and Tom has been waiting a while in Green Bay, so let's go to Tom. Tom, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the book. I was wondering if Jerry had ever heard of Colonel John Hancock from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. He fits the pattern of what your soldier did almost exactly. He was left Oshkosh. He was in the Iron Brigade in the 2nd, and then he ended up in leading the 14th Regiment, Voluntary Infantry, And he was an Oshkosh native, though, but he became a colonel. When he returned to Oshkosh, he went west and was the first cranberry, started the first cranberry operations in Wisconsin over by Prairie and Jackson County.
Gee, that, no, I don't know about him. That's...
Well, his over 100 letters that he wrote home while he was in the Civil War, and a lot of his other materials, including speeches and letters from Sherman and Grant, are all down at the Oshkosh Museum. Yeah. They just got them last year.
That's very interesting material. Wisconsin had a huge presence in the Civil War. No,
yes.
No question about it. My guy, I have him going into the Civil War from Watertown, New York, and New York, upstate New York, had a huge number of. Soldiers in the Civil War as well, and a fair number of them did come to Wisconsin. So that part of my story is accurate.
Thanks, Don. John Hancock. That's a name that I didn't know. Well, I knew the name John Hancock, but a different John Hancock. Let's put it that way. Thanks again. Let's go to Ted in Wales next. Ted, hello to you.
Hello. My question for Jerry is. Well, in hopes of diverting him from his passion for rural life in Wisconsin, I wondered if he could look toward the fascinating small factory cities in Wisconsin, ethnically diverse, rich topics for examination by a writer like Jerry.
I have I've done a little bit of that, but my passion continues to be in the rural areas and the small towns of the state. And incidentally, in doing that, I have gotten into the farm machinery manufacturers in a book that the Historical Society will be publishing next year. So I've done a little bit of digging into J.I. Case and what they did in Racine and. A little bit in what A.O. Smith did in Milwaukee and so on. But I haven't started with the idea, unfortunately, I guess, for those who would be interested in it, to look in depth at the history of some of the small firms that became large in Wisconsin. Again, I start with it always from the small town, the farm perspective, and then wherever that leads me, and sometimes that does take me into the cities, obviously, to look at the contributions that firms there made to rural life.
How has the book been doing, by the way?
Well, it officially came out this week, Larry.
Oh, well, see, I got it early, so I thought it's been out a few weeks.
this is the first week.
Oh, so, well, who could tell? Yeah,
I probably sold 2 or 3 copies. I don't know.
Oh, it's going to sell a lot of copies. But you got some. Before I even forget about it, we get too far along. I do want to mention some events where you'll be participating and reading. So what have we got? We got September 19th, which is just coming up Saturday.
Yes, yeah, Saturday I am at the Morgan Horse Field Days, which is at the Schuster Farm in Deerfield area, and there I'm talking both that the Morgan Horse Show goes on 10 to 5, and I'm talking in the morning, 11:30 I think, and then again in the afternoon at 2:30. But there I'll be there all day signing books. Then on Monday evening, September 21st, 7 o'clock, I'm at the Sequoia Library in Madison, and just to quickly run through the list of a few that are coming up. October 1st, 7 o'clock at the Chippewa Falls Library. October 15th at 7 p.m., I'm at the Reader's Loft Bookstore in Green Bay. And then October 20th at 7 o'clock, Barnes & Noble here in Madison, at Madison West location. And that's the official launch for the book. I have a Madison official launch, and then October 24th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the Central Wisconsin official launch at Patterson Memorial Library in Wild Rose, which is my hometown. And some people, and they correctly point this out, my Link Lake, Wisconsin is patterned after Wild Rose, and that's true. People are always asking me, well, tell me about why didn't you just name it Wild Rose? I said, well, I want to do some other things. That's why I didn't do that.
Well, the
and one other thing, Larry, too.
Yeah.
To check my website, jerryapps.com, and there you will see, when you get into my blog, which is on my website, a list of my upcoming events. I just gave you a few for the next couple of weeks.
And the website's got all your other books. And
exactly.
All that. Yeah, so it's Jerry Apps, and Apps, of course.
APPS.
APPS.
And Jerry with a J. Jerry APPS.
All right. .com. All right. Well, we'll take some more calls. You can join in, too, with a question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to John in Plainfield. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Jerry, nice to hear you. Just wanted to say I've been a great fan of your books and the history of Central Wisconsin here that you've portrayed.
Okay.
Our family farm has also got ties all the way back to the Civil War. So look forward to reading your next book.
You know, Plainfield's right on the edge of Ames County, too. So, so when you if you have a chance to read Blue Shadows Farm, I may even mention Plainfield in it because I tend to confuse people by mentioning all of the towns in the area, except for the two that I made up, which is Willow River and Link Lake.
John, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you get when you go out and do a reading. They're a lot of fun, aren't they?
I talked to 120 people in Oshkosh yesterday, in their learning in retirement program.
Ah.
And we just had a wonderful time, as I told about these three generations and how they related to this farm in central Wisconsin. And then the stories, so people come up to me afterward with all kinds of their own stories that relate to and are triggered by the things that I mentioned in the book. So it's great fun.
Let's go to Steve in Sauk County. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. I appreciate your show. Jerry, I really enjoy your books. In your circus book, where did you get all your information? I'm really interested in that book, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Yeah, the book is Ringlingville, USA, and it's published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press a couple of years ago. I spent the better part of 3 or 4 years researching that book. A major part of the research materials for Ringlingville, USA, I found and are available to anyone at Circus World Museum in Baraboo. They have a wonderful archive of materials that go back to the very early days of not only the Ringling Brothers Circus, but other circuses as well. Additionally, I discovered some fascinating circus research material in Columbus, Ohio. A fellow there had purchased at auction a number of the account books, the employer records, and all of that sort of thing, and had them in his basement. And after I'd convinced him that I was legitimate and was doing writing a book on the topic, he gave me full access to all of these materials. So Ringlingville, the book, has materials in it that are found in no other circus book before that time on the Ringlings. I found out why they made so much money, for example, which was one of the questions I had. 50 cents for tickets, adults, 25 cents for kids. So that's the quick answer to Ringlingville and how I researched it. It was a very challenging book to do and probably my most historic book of all that I've written. People look at my books and say, well, that one's more of a story. And, well, Ringlingville is both story and history.
You've done some novels now, but before we go back to the phones here, you like that novel approach?
Well, what I'm able to do with fiction is to use historical information, and I have a head full of it, and I have a house full of it. to weave a story that brings people into the history in what I believe to be an interesting way. The story form is a very compelling form. People enjoy being entertained, obviously, by a story, but I've discovered that through story I can also teach. I can't get the teaching out of my blood. I've done it for many years. It's a way to inform. It's a way to inspire. Story does so much if you know how to do it, and many, many people do. Both oral stories and written stories. So it's through story that I'm able to deal with issues and questions and problems and situations that I'm less easily do in writing a nonfiction narrative. Furthermore, I have my characters in my stories, in my novels, taking sometimes very controversial positions. And when I share this and do readings, people say to me, "Where in the world did that guy come up with that idea?" I don't bother to tell them that maybe some of those ideas came out of the author's head, but it's because it's so fun. The characters become real to people, which is what it should be. I mean, that's how when good fiction works. That's what should happen. But when they come up to me and are all upset with a given character, I just sort of smile because I'm with my novels. I do try to show several different perspectives on a question, and I can do that far easier in a story than I could in a narration. When you do it in narration, many people will say, "Oh, that sounds like preaching," and nobody wants to be preached to, and that's true. But in a story, you can sneak in all kinds of things. So that's one of the reasons I'm drawn to the novel form in writing about history.
Well, Kurt in Chippewa Falls has a commenter question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Kurt.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks. Good afternoon. Jerry, what you've just been saying, I am a preacher, and I certainly agree and resonate with your thoughts about telling stories as a way of informing and educating, and that's a very powerful and dangerous medium.
Exactly.
The story. My question has to do with, have you thought of, you know, the future of local writing, such as you yourself and Michael Perry, another Wisconsin author, and others, in the digital age with e-books and all of that? Is this ever only going to be a part-time hobby for people like yourself who have this talent, or, you know, is it going to survive at all, the local book, the local novel?
That's really an excellent question. And as an aside, Mike Perry is a good friend of mine, and I've known him since he first started writing. In my estimation, maybe I'm naively optimistic, but I believe that the story about a local area, about a given place, is going to survive and survive very well. That's not a new idea. Stories about the South, and we've had a bunch of Southern authors, and stories about the West, those have been interesting. And it's only within the last decade or two that people have begun to discover that stories about the Middle West have some kind of impact, especially stories that come from the Upper Midwest. So I see an interesting future for those who wish to get into doing this sort of thing. It's you might call it niche writing, and that's fine. But for me, it's both dealing with a geographic area, the Upper Midwest, with more of a focus on Wisconsin as the center of it. But there's the broader idea that you can deal with in my niche, the Upper Midwest, in farming and agriculture and small communities. That's what draws people in. I have no argument with those who want to write far more generalized pieces that center in New York or the center of California or wherever they happen to be. That's just fine. But I do see an emerging interest in the what I call niche writing that focuses on local areas. Now, the same thing for the publishing industry. The national publishers have suffered severely in the last year and a half because of the recession. Less so, I would say, with many of the more regional publishers. Today, I used to work for the McGraw-Hill Book Company in Manhattan as an acquisitions editor. I did that part-time for 7 years. And so I know something about the national publishing scene firsthand. But it's the regional publishers that seem to be thriving. And I may be naive to say this as, in terms of future direction. But publishers like the ones that I use today, the University of Wisconsin Press, the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, publishers like Voyager Press in Minneapolis, Fulcrum Press. These are all publishers that I've worked with and am currently working with. They seem to be doing okay during this time of severe cutback for a whole bunch of reasons, many of which are related to what I said earlier of focusing on a local area, dealing with it both, and it can be dealt with in a variety of ways. It can be dealt with through fiction, through novels, can be dealt through poetry, can be dealt through a nonfiction writing, can be dealt through memoir. All of the various forms of writing have application. So it doesn't, children's writing, it's not confining to focus on an area and to focus on a niche. In fact, for me, it allows me to do all kinds of creative things. But I stay within this area because it works for me, and I've gone way beyond what your question suggested. But
I love your answer because I've been thinking about writing myself the
fact that you're a pastor. I want to add this note too. I have in all of my books a character that's a pastor. I have in my fiction books, and you'll have, if you haven't looked at them, you'll have great fun, I think, in reading about especially Increase Joseph Link, who was a pastor, a quirky one to be sure, who was tossed out of the Harvard Divinity School and moved to Wisconsin to create a whole new theology, a whole new religion, a whole band of followers I won't say anything more about you.
And how long did that last?
Interestingly enough, it's based on historical fact. In Wild Rose, Wisconsin, there was this quirky group called the Standalones, and they indeed had come from New York State. That's all in my first novel.
I'll see you when you get to Chippewa Falls.
Okay, yes, I'll be there shortly.
Yeah, October 1st.
October 1st.
All right, thanks a lot, Kurt, for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy, that was fun. What do you think?
I was going to ask you about Kindles and those kinds of books because he kind of implied that, but I want to make sure I get this question in from Kim in Dakota, Minnesota, who wonders if Blue Shadows Farm would be an appropriate read for her 11-year-old daughter. Her daughter loves history, keeps a history journal, and visits history museums.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah,
there's a good bunch of history. It's an expansive history lesson. Let's put it that way. If you read it,
although there is one character she might not like as well as the others, but and this kind of goes back to what you were talking about earlier. I found myself, I don't like this guy, and I think Jerry's doing a good job here.
and that's good because every community had those who were less than well liked. And thought of. But you wanted me to say a word about Kindle?
I want you to say a word about it.
For those who aren't familiar, the Kindle is an electronic book device that was made available now about 2 years ago by Amazon. And most people know about Amazon.com, which is one of the largest book distributors in the world these days. Kindle allows you, I have one, I can speak from first experience. A lot of my colleagues badmouth Kindle, and I wasn't going to do that until I had one. It allows one to have as many as 150 books, more than that even, on one device. And it has a hookup, a connection, whisper connection to Seattle, where you can buy books $9.99, and they come via the airways in some mystical way. I find it a very interesting device.
You like it, and
so far I like it fine. One of the good things about it is that you can increase the typeface, and it's when you read it, and that's especially useful to older people. Mm-hmm. I was at the Sheboygan Library a couple of weeks ago doing a writing workshop, and they had just gotten someone had given them a number of Kindles, and they are making them available to their older people on a rental basis. They had 150 books on each Kindle for them.
Oh boy! Well, it's not going to hurt the authors and the writers?
I don't think so. To give you a quick example, my book In a Pickle Now, it came out in hardcover, then it came out in softcover. It is on Kindle. I have just done an audio version. I spent 10 hours reading the book at a radio station here in town, so it will come out in audio. So next year you can get that book hardcover, softcover, Kindle. Audio 3P3 iPod and CD. Larry, that's the future of this work. The people have multiple interests in reading, and they expect multiple forms on which to do it. The book will survive. The paper version of a book will survive, but all of these other alternatives will be there as well.
Jerry, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jerry Apps, Madison historian and writer and author of his latest book, which is called Blue Shadows Farm. It's published by the University of Wisconsin Press, and I'm really pleased to have him back, and he'll come back again. Don't forget this. Go to his website. Just take a look at jerryapps.com, JerryApps.com, and you can get information on his books and also about his coming appearances. One, I'll just mention the next one, the 19th, the Saturday, the Morgan Horse Field Day at Schuster Farm in Deerfield. Well, coming up tomorrow, gosh, it's Garden Talk time. Bob Tomisch and Becky Gutzman, our guests. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.